From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we're breaking from our usual Friday local news roundtable because yesterday afternoon we had the opportunity to speak with Illinois' junior U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth. As a former Army National Guard helicopter pilot and a disabled veteran, she's been at the center of a number of significant political and policy conversations in Washington.
President Trump travels to Qatar on Wednesday. Qatar is the country that plans to give Trump a present, a $400 million Qatari jet.
ABC News learning of a new and alarming air traffic control outage. This time, controllers in the Denver area losing communications with planes for some 90 seconds. This happened on Monday. This has already happened multiple times at Newark Airport. And tonight, an air traffic controller coming forward saying he saw two passenger jets here in the Northeast just seconds away from a mid-air collision.
Mass layoffs are coming for the Department of Veterans Affairs. The VA secretary has said the department is looking at laying off about 80,000 employees to increase efficiency.
Senator Duckworth is a Democrat from Hoffman Estates. She's in her second term. She's a member of the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, where she chairs the Subcommittee on Aviation Safety, Operations, and Innovation. We spoke with her late Thursday afternoon. Senator Tammy Duckworth, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Thanks for having me back.
So the Trump administration wants to accept a giant aircraft from the royal family in Qatar, use it as Air Force One, and take it with him when he leaves the White House. What do you think of this idea?
Well, I think it's blatantly and historically corrupt, and I think it is a bribe of the president of the United States, and especially from coming from a nation that is known to host terrorist organizations like Hamas. It is not acceptable.
The attorney general, though, says this is legal. I'm sure there are people out there who think, oh, this could save tax money, right? Because we're spending all this money for Boeing. They're taking their sweet time getting their 747s for the new Air Force One. What do you say to that?
Well, what I say, it's going to actually stick the taxpayers with even more money. We've already spent the money on the two new Air Force Ones that are under construction. But this so-called gift is going to require us to spend upwards of $1 to $1.7 billion to make sure this aircraft is up to the requirements to be Air Force One. So it's going to have to be stripped down to the bones of the aircraft, essentially, to make sure that there are no listening devices implanted, that there's no data gathering devices that are implanted, and then it will have to be hardened with anti-missile capabilities. It will have to be hardened with all the special equipment that makes an Air Force One survivable in the most extreme of weather and also attack if it were to come under attack. And so it's actually this so-called gift is going to stick the taxpayers with another almost $2 billion to spend on top of what we're already spending to buy the Air Force One.
You know, there are so many different ways in which President Trump and his family seem to be profiting from his office. Or you can go back as far as Jared Kushner getting a couple billion-dollar investment from the Saudis to the meme coin that allows, you know, anyone to put money into their pockets, the Live Golf Tour, this aircraft. What, in your view, what is being done to put the brakes on any of this?
Well, none of my Republican colleagues are willing to do anything to put the brakes on this. And so they are complicit and collaborators in the grift that the Trump family is basically engaging in at the expense of the American people. And until my colleagues step up and stand up and oppose this, there's not a lot that we can do other than to pursue remedies in the judiciary and in the court system. And of course, we will pursue them every step of the way in that. But again, you know, it's going to take Republicans standing up and saying that, you know what, enough corruption is enough corruption. But I guess apparently there's not enough corruption to have my Republicans speak up yet. I'm starting to hear on this Qatari jet deal that some of my colleagues are starting to express that they're uneased, but they need to be stronger voices out there and help us stop this from happening.
I feel like I've heard this for, 8-9 years now. Oh, people are condemning him in private, but they're not willing to speak out about it. What do you get the sense would be a tipping point, if not a foreign government attempting to give an aircraft for private use?
Well, I think the tipping point for my Republican colleagues is if their constituencies let them know That they will not be reelected. Right now, they're more afraid of Elon Musk and Donald Trump than they are of their own constituencies. They care more about what Trump and Musk think about them than they do about the well-being of their constituents. I mean, why else would they stand by and allow Doge and Elon Musk and the Trump administration to basically raid Medicaid for over $800 billion in order to fund their tax cuts for millionaires and their billionaire buddies? This is about making sure that my Republican colleagues understand that they will lose elections if they don't stand up and represent their constituents.
Something else you've been focused on this week has to do with the Federal Aviation Administration and aviation safety. Of course, you're the chairwoman of the subcommittee on that in the Senate, in the subcommittee of the Aviation Safety Operations and Innovation. We've had reports, as you well know, this week about loss of communication with aircraft coming into an airport in New Jersey. There was another problem in Colorado, I believe. What is happening with the FAA right now?
Well, the FAA is short personnel, and they're short air traffic controllers, and they're operating on equipment that is literally decades old. Some of our air traffic control towers put into place in the 1950s and 1960s, and we need to upgrade them. And after decades of basically neglect, last year in a bipartisan way, I was able to work with Senator Moran of Kansas, and we passed FAA reauthorization, which put a tremendous amount of money towards upgrading the FAA's air traffic control system, but also increase the number of grants available to train air traffic controllers, the workforce development piece, and pilot development piece by sixfold. And so you're starting to see that happening. We have the first class of air traffic controllers in the academy right now, over 3,000 of them. But we are very far behind, and we need to upgrade and modernize as quickly as possible. I'm going to be making sure that we hold this administration accountable in releasing those dollars that were authorized last year. You know, they've been holding and withholding federal dollars that were basically appropriated by Congress last year, and they've been putting a hold on them, and we need to make sure that those funds get released so that we can upgrade and modernize our air traffic control system.
Investment in government infrastructure is not something I hear as a big priority from this administration. Why do you think this area could be or should be or would be any different from the many areas where the administration is looking to slash government as much as it possibly can?
Well, we have to be vigilant because they say that they're going to make these investments, and a lot of focus is on them right now because of the failures, the very public failures, not the least of which the tragedy that happened here in Washington, D.C. with the passenger airliner that collided with the Army Black Hawk helicopter. So there is public sentiment that they need to fix this. They need to answer to that. But at the same time, this is the same administration that even after that tragedy, they still fired hundreds of FAA workers whose main job is mission, whose main mission is air safety. And so they are, by the way, they're still offering retirement bonuses to air traffic controllers. And we think maybe as many as 2,000 experienced air traffic controllers might take advantage of that retirement bonus being pushed out of their jobs at the FAA. And so, yeah, we have to hold them accountable. We have to make sure that they continue to make the investments that Congress appropriated. And we have to do our job as watchdogs. And in this case, I'm pleased to say that I have Republican colleagues who are willing to stand up and help me push.
You know, you mentioned the tragedy in Washington, D.C. You have such a unique perspective on that as a Black Hawk pilot yourself. This is the first time we've had a chance to talk about that since that tragic episode. What do you understand to be the latest? Was it a systemic problem? Human error? Where is the investigation going as you understand it? I know it's preliminary still. But
yes. So the key thing that people need to know is that that particular helicopter route has been shut down. But there are similar routes like that all over the country. And in fact, I, having commanded the Black Hawk unit out of Midway Airport for a number of years, and I flew out of Midway as a Black Hawk pilot for well over a decade, I'm very familiar with this airspace, very high, heavily traveled airspace where helicopter air traffic is right there next to commercial jet aviation traffic. What happened in DCA was a number of things. There was human factor to it. The Black Hawk was not where it was supposed to be precisely. It was off in terms of how high it was off the ground, as well as how far it was laterally left to right, east to west. That we're looking to see if it's a problem with the instruments in the Black Hawk, because the preliminary investigation shows that the altimeter, which tells you how high off the ground you are, was showing two different things to the two different pilots in the aircraft. And then we also have an issue with just the operational procedures here, which is why we've shut down that particular route, because that the operational procedure here allowed all of the helicopter traffic, not just the military one, but also law enforcement and hospitals, to shut off a particular device called an ADS-B out, which is a GPS radar reporting signal that tells all the other aircraft in the airspace where they are, where you are, and that was turned off in the Black Hawk, and that was the standard procedure. It was an exception given to all of the helicopter traffic in this area, and so that now has is going to be reversed as well.
You are as read in on these issues as anyone would be in this country. Do you still feel it's safe to fly, given all the reporting we've seen in recent years about near collisions or near misses, I guess, whatever term you want to use on that?
So I do think it's safe to fly. I'm still flying, and my family is still flying. Their system is so redundant that even when you had the, you know, the radio outage in Newark, for example, in New Jersey, those aircraft, all the aircraft in the air were already in an attitude where, you know, they were at different altitudes, they were at different locations, so that they would not have run into each other, even though the radio communication went down for 90 seconds. Now, that does not mean that we shouldn't be making investments and continuing to do safety checks to not allow that situation to ever happen again. We still have to put money into the system. That's why I'm going to remain the leading voice in Congress pushing to continue the modernization efforts we started last year, but also hold everybody who uses the airspace around the country, whether it's civilian commercial aviation, whether it is private pilots, whether it is military and law enforcement, hold them to the highest standards so that we do not get into a situation where another tragedy happened. The United States has the safest air traffic control system in the world, and we need to maintain that it stays that way. But the only way we can do that is by making the necessary investments.
Another area I know you've been following closely in the government are cuts for veterans, both employed by the federal government, broadly speaking, specifically at the VA, and then as well as veteran services. Take it where you will. Do you have a sense? I mean, there's been talk of as many as, 80,000 job cuts at the VA? I don't think that's happened yet, but what can possibly be done to continue delivering veterans the services that they have earned with that sort of staffing cut?
Well, President Trump has his way. They wouldn't get those services. And congressional Republicans who want to find $2 trillion in tax cuts to fund millionaires and billionaires are going to come after VA. It's one of the larger budgets in the federal government, and they would rather veterans go without their health care and their benefits than to make sure that the ultra-rich in this country pay their fair share. Frankly, the VA cannot afford to cut 80,000 jobs. Part of the reason why we've had an increase in the VA budget is because we, in a bipartisan way, successfully passed the PACT Act a couple years ago, which allowed veterans who were exposed to toxic substances from their service, whether it was the burn pits in Iraq or Camp Lejeune tainted water, are able to get the benefit they earned and that we owe them as the American people. And so that actually added upwards of over 2 million veterans to the VA's rolls, which is why we had to hire more people to help take care of them. The cuts that have already happened at VA, the thousands of employees that have already been fired at the VA, has resulted in things like operations being postponed, the telephone hotline for caregiver support. These are the family members who help disabled veterans do everything from change their clothes and bathe and eat and live. That hotline has now, we're hearing of more and more longer wait times. We just need to make sure that we don't allow this Trump administration to basically go back on America's promise to our veterans. And the VA cannot suffer $80,000 in tax cuts, and which is why I am really leading the push to make sure that we keep our employees at the VA's employed, but also to get our veterans, the 6,000 veterans who were fired from their federal jobs, get them their positions back as well.
All right, Senator Tammy Duckworth, I understand you need to go. Thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
Senator Tammy Duckworth is the junior United States Senator from Illinois, although in less than 2 years, she will be the senior United States Senator. That's when Dick Durbin's term ends. By the way, we spoke with Durbin on yesterday's program. You can hear that interview at our website, 21stshow.org. I do want to thank everyone who took the time to email or send by text message questions for Senators Durbin and Duckworth. I will say I'm a little disappointed we didn't get to put them to Senator Duckworth. This is the way things go sometimes with these high-level political interviews. I will say we thought we were going to get potentially 20 minutes to talk with Senator Duckworth. Ultimately, it proved to be just about 13, and that was happening in the midst of an interview. I get a text message from her spokesperson saying, hey, she's got a hard out at 4:13 Central Time. She needs to go. That is the way these things go sometimes. I just wanted to share that with you. That is why we were not able to get more questions on more topics with her. So that is a little look behind the curtain at how our program is made. Sometimes with circumstances outside of our control. All right, we are going to continue the program after a short break. We're going to have our political roundtable and then looking at the memification of Pope Leo. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.